This Shabbos is an international Aguna Awareness Shabbos promoted by ORA, the Organization for Resolution of Agunot. I support ORA, and I definitely support Agunot, but I must admit that I find speaking about divorce in a drasha challenging. All aspects of divorce are very sensitive for the couple, for their parents, for their children, for their friends. That's why I sent out the warning email I did on Friday in advance of this drasha. I want to take the next 10 minutes to talk about how we can help divorcing couples to avoid deteriorating into aguna situations with the aid of an insight from Megillas Esther. My first involvement with an aguna situation was in 2002 with a husband who didn't want to issue a get. He was Israeli. He was holding out for more money. I called his 80-year-old mother in Israel to tell her what was going on at 2 a.m. her time. Just minutes later, he called me to say he would give the get. Not all of my involvements have been so successful. Over my last 18 months in Toronto, I spent innumerable hours trying to arrange a particular get. Ontario actually has a strong get law, but this guy is willing to go to jail rather than cooperate. His wife is still in Aguna today. In between those two cases, I dealt with a few husbands who threatened to withhold a get unless they received favorable divorce terms, a wife who refused to receive a get just because her husband wanted to give one, and a man who refused to cooperate with Chalitza because he wanted money. What can we do as a community to prevent things like this? So there are many steps we can and must take, both to prevent aguna situations and to deal with them after they arise. Those are fodder for many more drashos. But our best tool for prevention is the halachic prenuptial agreement, which can also be signed by couples who are already married. I know Eitz Chaim hosted an event with postnuptial agreements in 2016. These agreements work. The prenup promoted by the Rabbinical Council of America is reported to have a 100% success rate. The RCA's agreement has just two parts. I expect to give a shiur on the halachic background after Mincha this evening, but in a nutshell, part one is a binding arbitration agreement, a contract stating that if, God forbid, the marriage breaks down and they stop living together, they will resort to a specific Beis Din named in the document. Part two is a support obligation, a contract stating that if, God forbid, the marriage breaks down and they stop living together, and the wife is willing to appear in Beis Din but the husband is not, then the husband will pay a set sum per day as his support obligation for his wife. People often assume that the reason these agreements work is part two, the support payment. But experienced dayanim say that the real driving force of the prenup is the arbitration agreement, because it eliminates the impetus and opportunity for each spouse to fight for an advantage. The vast majority of human beings who get married expect and desire to remain peacefully married. If things break down, the dynamic certainly changes, but most spouses don't normally leap to actively harm the other. In fact, a popular figure in the secular literature says that in North America, only 20% of divorces are classified as, quote, high conflict. It's not great, but it means that 80% are not high conflict. But the halachic world is worse. In a 2017 article, Dr. Yitzhak Schachter, a clinical psychologist, reported study results contending that 57% of Orthodox Jewish divorcees describe their divorce as acrimonious or highly contentious. Why are we so much worse than our neighbors? The first factor Dr. Schachter named was the get process itself, not the Beis Din part of it. More than 50% said their Beis Din process was either positive or very positive. It seems to be the process of selecting a Beis Din, with each side pushing for a venue they believe will favor them. That doesn't exist in general society, but it does in our world, and it makes divorce competitive for very high stakes. High-stakes competition promotes deception and manipulation. We feel compelled to pursue what's best for us. That's a quick route to join the 57% who experience an acrimonious or highly contentious divorce. Keshet Star, the head of ORA, said as much in a 2022 article. Engaging in acts of war tends to start a cycle of animosity, each partner doubling down to protect themselves and upping the ante in the conflict. That's why the arbitration agreement is effective. It extinguishes a potential flashpoint, and it points to something we as a community can do, specifically, avoid unintentionally encouraging a fight. Consider the heroes and villains of Megillas Esther. Who are the villains? Haman and Achashverosh, right? Midrashim Ead Vashti, Memuchan. But a closer read of the story reveals two more sets of villains. In the third parak, Mordechai refuses to bow to Haman. But Haman doesn't notice. Haman only finds out when the royal servants at the gate see what Mordechai is doing daily. And Vayagidu LaHaman, they decide to tell Haman. The royal servants are the third man in, villains for sparking a fight that doesn't involve them. In the fifth parak, Haman is angry that Mordechai still won't bow, and he summons his wife Zeresh and his close friends. Their reaction is not just sympathy. They give him an idea. Make a giant gallows and hang Mordechai. Zeresh and Haman's friends are the third man in, villains for sparking a fight that doesn't involve them. When we give advice to people who are involved in a divorce, we run the risk of emulating the mistakes of the royal servants, of Zeresh, of Haman's friends. And Dr. Schachter makes this point, blaming, quote, the very close-knit family systems in the Orthodox world and the too many cooks in the kitchen phenomenon. The fact is, there are often many players and authorities, community members, community rabbis, mentors, family members, etc., giving advice and directing the divorcing couple. Keshet Starr makes this point too, saying, too often, a former husband and wife are encouraged by their friends and family to engage in acts of war, to protect themselves, to fight for what's yours. In times like this, we need a village to offer support, not an army to go to battle. We must offer support, validating the pain of our friends, listening empathetically, letting them know we are in pain over their suffering. But we need to be careful not to inspire aggression, not to point out more reasons for umbrage, not to be the match that lights the fire and makes our friends angrier. Their lawyers can suggest a course of action, while we provide the support they deserve. Mishlei criticizes someone like Zeresh, who catalyzes fights. We need to make sure that our support is positive and productive. The Rambam wrote that the Torah transformed marriage. Prior to Sinai, conjugal relations were generally lawless and ritualless. Halacha imposed changes that formalized the relationship and created legal protections for women. There was a transaction with witnesses, a presumption of permanence. A man accepts responsibility for his wife's well-being, especially on the financial level. Rabbi Michael Rosenzweig adds that the institution of a ksuba, a payment guaranteed to a woman upon the dissolution of the marriage, harnesses a financial obligation to sanctify the marriage, guaranteeing the wife security and dignity. These values, permanence, security, dignity, sanctity, are at risk when couples divorce. A prenuptial agreement can reduce the risk with its support obligation and primarily with its binding arbitration agreement. It works well. And the rest of us, the friends and family, can do our part to be not the inciting army, but the supportive village.